from bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And thanks very much, Ollie. Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Show. Hope you're well. It's the 17th of October, 2018. Good to be with you. Lots to talk about today. Let's do it now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, I'll be joined this hour by David Noakes, the former politician who once stood for leadership of the UKIP party, of UKIP, I should say, once stood for leader of UKIP. He also founded Immunobiotech Limited, which until recently manufactured and promoted GC Math. That's been very controversial, and in fact, he's got a very serious court case coming up next month. David Noakes joins the programme. We'll be talking to him about all of those things and Brexit as well. He founded the website eutruth.org.uk for many years now. He's campaigned to raise awareness of what the European Union means for democracy around the continent of Europe. So a lot to talk about with David Noakes. And later on in the programme, Michael Rivero returns. Michael joins me every month, as you know, to round up the big stories across the pond, as it were, in the US. WhatReallyHappened.com and the What Really Happened radio show. Michael Rivero joins the programme in the second hour. Now, my voice is probably not going to survive 2 hours, but I'm going to give it socks. I'm going to give it large. And I'm going to try and remain calm during the course of the programme. This horrible laryngitis and flu-y type thing that I've got is showing no signs of going away. And I've been better. I'm not great at the moment, but I'm happy to be here. I hate not doing the programme. And there's some very important things to talk about. So David Noakes joins the programme in a few minutes' time. So I'm going to cut short the news roundup because it's very Brexit-centric anyway. But there is a very important story which has been covered by UK television and radio today. And it's a hugely important story. And it's one that I've covered as much as I possibly can over the last 3 years. This is a headline that you would have read if you'd been on the BBC website today. Thousands of babies in toxic homes, warns Commissioner. Thousands of babies in toxic homes, warns Commissioner. So I'll read you some of this. Nearly 16,000 babies are growing up in households where they are at risk of severe harm, a report by England's Children's Commissioner is warning. At risk of severe harm. The report says that of 19,640 under 1 year olds identified as being in need, 15,820 were still living at home. I can hear you think, dear listener, you're thinking, Richie, didn't you report on Sunday View the week before last that the amount of newborns being taken into care has doubled in the last few years? Yes, I did. And we'll come back to that in a minute. Obviously, it's relevant. So the Children's Commissioner is lamenting the fact that 19,600 and change under 1 year olds are in need, but 15,820 were still living at home. Right. Now, the report by the England's Children's Commissioner estimates that 8,300 babies are growing up amid the toxic trio, that's a quote by the way, toxic trio of drug or alcohol addiction, domestic violence and severe mental ill health. The government says its domestic abuse bill will tackle these sorts of issues. The government is going to present a domestic abuse bill. It's terrifying stuff, this. What's the bill going to say? What's it going to recommend? The Commissioner's report even continues the BBC. I'm reading from the BBC. It's called A Crying Shame, by the way. It's calling for more cash for local authority children's services, and it's urging the government to address the issue in the forthcoming budget. The report analyses official data from 2017, says the largest risk factor is the risk of abuse and neglect. Risk of abuse and neglect, followed by family dysfunction. The family being in acute distress and parental illness or disability. This report says that children under the age of one growing up in homes where there are issues of addiction, domestic abuse and mental ill health are known to be at very high risk of severe harm. The report goes on to say that while more than 8,000 babies are in households with all three of these toxic issues, around 25,000 babies are in homes with two of them. So why this particular focus on the under ones? Well, the Commissioner's Office says babies are particularly vulnerable as they are entirely reliant on their parents to keep them safe and happy. When they are born into families where they might be harmed or neglected, the risk to them is greater than to older children. But didn't I say on this programme only a week ago, didn't I read and report that the amount of newborn babies being taken into care had doubled? I did. Because that study has shown that over 8 years, the number of newborns subject to care proceedings has doubled from just over 1,000 in 2007-2008 to nearly 3,000 in 2016-2017. A newborn is classed as being under 7 days old. And it might have appeared to be scaremongering earlier on when I tweeted a link to the BBC story with the caption, "Coming for your children." They are coming for your children. Because what they are doing, and learned, far more learned men and women than me, by the way, academics and legally trained people like Ian Josephs and others have said, and they are right to say, is that the establishment is widening the parameters all the time, or widening the net to enable them to claim that more and more babies are at risk of harm. At risk of harm. This is key. Not that they have been harmed, but that they are at risk of harm. Therefore, they should be subject to a care order, which is a very flowery way of saying, we'll send a goon squad into the home and we'll take the child away from its mother. Speaking of Children's Commissioner Anne Longfield, here she is today speaking to the media in general. This is Anne Longfield. Listen carefully.
We do spend money already, but increasingly on a fewer number of children at point of crisis. These are babies in their first few months of life. And what we need to make sure is that maternity services are working with health visitors and indeed social workers and family support to really be able to help those families reduce their risks and problems and help support those babies to be able to grow up and flourish and grow into resilient toddlers. This is a real time of high risk for children. We need to be aware how many children are vulnerable and be able to ensure that the support packages are in place to keep them safe and help them flourish.
It all sounds very reasonable. But what they want to do is, as I said, they want to widen the net or widen the parameters. Constantly doing that. Family dysfunction. Risk of a baby growing up in a home where there are issues of addiction. Now, I can tell you for a fact, issues of addiction doesn't mean necessarily that the mother or the father is currently addicted to alcohol or to some substance or another. No. It actually means where there is any history of addiction. And this is true. I've read through this report today. And I've read through several reports that have come out from various children's commissioners and various secretaries of state over the last 3-4 years. It means where there is any history of ill health when it comes to mental health, any mental health problems, it can be determined that that might not be a stable environment for the child to grow up in, because mum has had a history of mental ill health. Mum is doing quite well now, but it doesn't matter, or dad, or whatever. This is beyond. When you read this stuff, you realise that you're living in 1984. When the state is looking for any excuse to enter the what should be sacrosanct space that is your home, your domicile, your family, and point out any number of reasons why you're not fit to be a parent at this particular moment in time and to take your child away. Now, I've talked a lot about this. I'm not going to dwell on it today, but I am going to be picking this up on the programme in the coming days and in the coming weeks. Coming for your children. And I've said it before and I've said it again, and I will say it again, I should say. It is privatising children. At the very least, the very bottom of this agenda is privatising children. The state intervenes and takes a child away from a family based on the risk of harm, the possibility the child might be in danger in the weeks and months to come. Minority Report, childcare, this is, right? What does the state do then? Well, it hands the child over to a private corporation immediately in the shape of an adoption agency or a child placement company. This is true. This is not conspiracy theory. The child is worth tens of thousands of pounds, more even to the agencies and to the foster families. Companies like Barnardo's, worth billions. The child becomes a commodity. But that's not the half of it. That's just one aspect of it. That's the aspect of it that you can explain to people. There's another side of it that's so sinister, most people can't get their heads around it and they don't want to hear about it. But that's what's going on in your country today. Amazing. And right across the board, this is reported today. And none of the UK television, radio, current affairs, mid-morning programmes or lunchtime programmes had the moxie, had the balls to go out there and find one of the many men and women in academia who are totally opposed to this to get the other side of it. We can't have the other side of it. That's got to be marginalised. So today there was no opposition to what Longley was saying, the Children's Commissioner. No opposition to it. This is a good thing. There are loads of babies at risk. We need to identify those babies and we need to get them out of those homes. At risk. At risk. Not babies who have suffered violent abuse or emotional abuse or neglect or starvation. No. Babies that we have identified to be at risk of these things at some foreseeable stage in the future. You're living in 1984 now. You're living it. Incredible. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, David Noakes will join me live. And we've a lot to talk about with David, including a court case that he's facing next month where he could conceivably receive a custodial sentence for manufacturing and selling GC MAF. Some of you will know what that is. Others won't. We'll get into it with David Noakes in a minute, back in 90 seconds.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk. Now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
I've never said and never would say or dream of saying that there are no circumstances in which there needs to be an intervention. I would never dream of saying anything so stupid. And I don't feel I've always got to qualify that every time I do a program or every time I mention this particular subject. Of course, there are children in this country in horror houses where their own parents are doing unspeakable things to them. I'm well aware of it. You're talking to somebody who grew up in a house like that. If ever anybody needed intervention when they were 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age, it was me. I could have done with somebody locally intervening and stopping the things that were happening to me, which I've spoken about from time to time on the programme. Physical abuse, not sexual abuse, by the way. But not the rates and not the numbers they're talking about. It can't be that they need to take 20,000 children out of homes based on the risk of future emotional or physical abuse. Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. We'll get back into it anon, as they say. Let's welcome our guest to the programme then. He should be no stranger to you if you've heard this programme before. I've known him now over 10 years. He used to come on a radio programme that I made during my time in Spain, and I've always liked him. He stood for the leadership of UKIP at one time. He was known as a politician. But I came across him because of his website about the European Union, which is a real resource for information about the history of the European Union and what the European Union really means for democracies around Europe. That website, by the way, is eutruth.org.uk. Now, he founded a company as well called Immunobiotech Limited, which I've spoken to him about in the past. Until recently, the company made and promoted GC-MAF, and we will talk about that later on. Because, as I said, he's got a legal case pending next month, and it's a very serious case indeed. As a computer consultant, he's also worked for companies like JP Morgan Chase. It's good to welcome back to the programme an old pal, David Noakes. David, welcome back to our show. How are you?
Hello, Rich. Not so good. The trauma's not doing my body any good.
Well, I can't imagine. I didn't know the extent of this until we spoke this morning. I'm going to concede that. I had no idea what was going on. I've been looking into it today and reading one or two articles. We'll get into it in a few minutes. But you're an expert on the European Union and the institutions that make up the European Union. Verifiable expert. There's no doubt about that. Will this country leave the European Union on March 29th next year?
Well, of course, Theresa May doesn't really want to go. And she's made that quite obvious with the negotiations she's been carrying out. And, okay, it's the 29th of March. I hope it happens. But with Theresa May in charge, I'm really not sure it will.
She's in Brussels today, where she's going to be speaking to the remaining 26 members of the EU, who will then apparently retire and talk about May behind her back, and will then come back to her and say, yes, we accept your proposals for the so-called Northern Ireland backstop, which to me is a bit of a nonsense, or they'll say no. It looks to me, David, that the European Union is doing what the European Union did in Denmark, what it did in Ireland. It's basically playing this run-the-clock-down kind of game, panic Remainers, even panic Brexiteers in the country into thinking that, well, we've got to concede, we've got to maybe stay in the European Union, we've got to stay in one way or another. Is that how you read it? Is that what the European Union is doing?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's trying to panic everyone. You've got to remember the European Union is a dictatorship. It's a three-tier Politburo dictatorship. You have the Council of Ministers, the Council, and the 20 commissioners, the Commission. Those are the three unelected politburos that run the European Union. And then we have a sham parliament at Brussels. So there's no democracy coming through. This is a very dirty political, or well, a political organization getting back at us. And that is the danger of the European Union. We are joining a dictatorship, a German-run dictatorship, and we've had one of those before.
And staying in the customs union, of course, is what some people have labelled Brexit in name only, or bino or beano, because it would mean that you would be subject to the EU rules and regulations around trade, but also the issue that so many people voted on, and so many people were accused of racism, of course, but many people voted on ending freedom of movement, not necessarily because they were all Little Englanders or racist, but because they knew that, you know, migration, particularly from Eastern Europe, had driven down wages, had made jobs more difficult to get, had put pressure on the health service and other public services as well. Staying in some sort of customs union would basically mean not leaving at all, David.
Well, that's right, and that's what they want. And the population of English people is only has a birth rate of only 1.8. You need a population of 2.1 to keep the population the same. So house prices should be falling in England, but they aren't, because we have massive immigration of at least 300,000 a year. The government won't tell us what the real figures are. And we are building houses only for immigrants. And we are having low wages for British people because the immigrants are here. And that's why the people voted to leave, because they're fed up with all the immigrants. You can't drive for cars because the roads are all crowded. As you say, you can't get into the NHS because the hospitals are crowded. The infrastructure is hopelessly overloaded. We can't cope with schools. Everything is swamped by immigration. But if we leave, will the bureaucrats stop all immigration, or will they keep it coming from countries sort of west of Greece, India, Pakistan, all the other countries? I don't know.
What do you think is going to happen? We heard today that the European Union's negotiator, Michel Barnier, was saying that one of the ways to break the current kind of impasse was to extend this so-called transition period, which is supposed to end on January 1st, 2021. That should be absolutely anathema to people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson and those so-called Brexiteers, people who are supposedly in favour of a real break and a proper break from the European Union. Is that in play, this idea that May might say, well, OK, we're struggling here, why don't we buy ourselves a bit more time? Which, again, to me would be horrifying, this idea that we could go on till 2025, which would be 9 years after the referendum last year. How do you see this playing out?
Yes, absolutely right. That's what they want to do. But people forget that there are 120,000 EU regulations in Britain now. And you, therefore, can break the law in 120,000 different places. We are all breaking the law under the European Union. There are 3,000 laws on our statute book, and so they can close your bank accounts at the flick of a switch now. Just a bureaucrat can make a phone call to your bank and close it down. They've done it to me. So these are the real reasons why we want to go. The financial reasons aren't important. But when you join a dictatorship, you get a very different government. And our lawyers no longer obey the British Constitution illegally. They no longer obey common law illegally. They obey EU law and corpus juris. And that is why our freedom is being massively eroded. So, I mean, there are huge financial benefits to leaving. I mean, the fishing industry, the EU almost closed our fishing industry. They fired 250,000 fishermen and fishwives, mostly on the East Coast, Hull, Grimsby, right up to Scotland. They did the same with Ireland. They fished our waters empty of fish by allowing the Russians and all the EU nations in. And you get all these people now standing on cliff tops with a rod and line thinking they're going to catch fish. There aren't any fish left. The EU's cleaned them all out. And we have the EU rules that you have a quota. So you have to throw 90% of your fish back in the sea every way, every day, dead because of EU quotas. That's the worst way of conserving fish stocks there ever has been. You just need big mesh sizes so the little fish can swim through. But no, the EU makes you catch them and then throw them back. It's a $40 billion industry if we get it back. And if we go through to 2026, that'll be 9 years of a $40 billion industry lost. And then, of course, we've got $210 billion wasted on EU-mandated quangos. So if we do away with them, that's according to the Cabinet Office, we'll save $210 billion there. And then we've got $100 billion wasted on implementing European regulations. And if you add all those together with the $11 billion contribution we make, which is pretty insignificant, there's $360 billion a year we'll save by leaving the European Union. So are they going to leave and save the $360 billion a year? Or are they going to leave us trapped inside this dictatorship?
Just want to point out that when you mentioned the fish figures, some of my listeners who will be in disagreement with you, they'll be wondering why I didn't challenge you on that point. The reason I didn't challenge, David, is because it's true. It's more than 1.5 million tons of healthy fish thrown back into the sea every year. I mean, this is extraordinary. You know, at a time when UK citizens are going to food banks because they're starving because of austerity. Austerity imposed on the country by the European Central Bank and the IMF, of course. Like in every other European country, it's crazy stuff. We're going to move away from the European Union now for we're going to leave it there for a while. We'll see what happens tonight and tomorrow. I mentioned earlier on that David founded a company called Immunobiotech Limited. Now, we spoke about this company way back when this particular program began in 2014, because at that time the company was manufacturing and it was promoting GC-MAF. Now, David, before we talk about what's been happening to you, what is GC-MAF? Because whenever your name gets mentioned, or whenever I do a phone in and somebody mentions GC-MAF or other alternative products, I get people, you know, either texting the program or emailing the program or tweeting the program saying that this is all mad stuff and it's dangerous, unproven, untested stuff, and it's all kind of hocus pocus, all this sort of stuff. This is what I get, you know, and I'm open to accept when people want to have, when I always put the other side out there, and I'm going to do that again today. What is GC-MAF? What is it? How can you explain it in as briefly as you can? What does it do?
GC-MAF is a human protein and a human right. It's made in our bodies. 5 billion people are making it every day. So to say it's untested is absolute rubbish. It's far more tested than any medical pharmaceutical drug product. GC-MAF has never killed anyone. If it had done, there'd be loads of dead people around the world. And it is completely safe. It is 1% the cost of chemotherapy, 40 times as effective. And if it was put into the NHS, which is my aim, it would save 120,000 of the 160,000 that die of cancer every year. GC-MAF not only will save people's lives from cancer, it also works on over 50 other diseases, including chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme, and autism, for example.
Before we talk about you using this to treat, or you providing this for people to treat various illnesses, give me more of an understanding of what it is. I'm not being obtuse here, because I genuinely don't know. Biochemically, what is it? Is it extracted from a person's blood, David? What exactly is it?
It's a protein, right? Found in blood. And it is 400 nanograms. We all have 400 nanograms of GCMAF. That's less than a half a billionth of a gram. It's a very small amount. It's absolutely essential to the immune system. It has 20 effects in the body, which are incredibly positive. And if you don't have GCMAF inside you, you get ill and die. And that's why it blocks cancers and 50 other diseases, block the production of the GCMAF in your body, because if they don't, they can't grow and survive, because the GCMAF kills the disease.
So taking it then is almost like getting a transfusion of sorts. So when the molecule is extracted and it's turned into a product, whether that's a serum or a tablet, you can explain that to me. I know we did this before a few years ago, but it'll be new to a lot of listeners. It can then be taken by people whose GCMAF is not as prominent or prevalent as it should be because they have an illness. And by taking it, it's like a transfusion of sort. You believe that your results have shown that it is effective in treating certain diseases. Is that fair to say?
Well, 11,000 people have taken it. 300 scientists have written 150 scientific research papers on it. And we know exactly what it is. We know exactly how safe it is. And when you consider that opioids and Actos and Avandia have killed 450,000 people, and these are pharmaceutical drugs, and GCMAF has never killed anyone, you can see just how evil the pharmaceutical companies are.
Why have the opioids killed people? Is it because of over-prescription or people taking overdoses? How does that work out?
Well, opioids are opium.
Yeah.
And huge numbers of people are taking them. They are even more addictive than opium, and people are dying at about the rate of 20,000 a year just in the USA.
Right. Now, I said at the outset of the program that that I've known you for a long time. We've never met, but I've known you. And I like you. I like David. But I'm going to do my job now, whether I like you or whether I don't like you. First of all, it's got to be pointed out that there's a company in Israel currently trialling it. Is that right?
Yes.
Good. Right. That's important. It's important that. Secondly, what about your critics who've said, listen, whether it works or whether it doesn't work, you've kind of circumvented the established and age-old trialing and testing methodology for drugs and for new medicines. And as an unqualified man, you shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't have done that, and that the state and the regulatory body in the state is right to come after you and say, you were doing all this stuff and you were giving it to people, and you're not qualified to do so. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I employed 4 top scientists and 7 doctors. The MHRA, who has ruthlessly closed me down, denies treatments to the public, all natural treatments. The MHRA denies all natural treatments to the public. So that's vitamin B17. It's cannabis. And it's cannabis oil, which is completely safe, and combrastatin, totally safe treatments. And, of course, they ban GCMAF. They allow anything by big pharmaceutical companies. Doesn't matter how many people they kill, that's fine. The MHRA has big pharmaceutical company directors on the board, and they allow anything from big pharmaceutical companies.
Do you think, David, looking back, that there might have been things, because I've been looking through the timeline today, and I'm not going to pretend that I don't have some sympathy for what's happening to you, because I do, because I believe you to be decent, you know, regardless of whether you made mistakes or not. But your critics will say to me, and they're not here, so I have to speak for them, they will say, David Noakes, however bright he might be, and I think you're pretty bright to be honest, you have no right to be telling people that they should discontinue various therapies prescribed by oncologists, whether it be radiotherapy or whatever. Looking back, do you think that you might have avoided stumbling blocks like that, and that maybe you shouldn't have been saying to people, listen, don't take chemotherapy?
On our website, we say do not continue any life-saving treatment. And
is that do not continue or do not discontinue?
Do not discontinue any life-saving treatment.
Okay. So when they've accused you of telling people to ignore what their oncologist is telling them, you're saying, my friend, that you never did that. Is that right? I'm not trying to catch you out here now, by the way. I'm not going to spring any surprises. I'm asking you honestly.
Chemotherapy is a poison that kills half of terminal stage 4 people. They don't die of the cancer, they die from the chemotherapy. They lose the function of their eyes, they lose the function of their major organs. It's a horrific death. No one wants to go through that. Even so, we don't recommend that you discontinue any treatment.
Tell me about these scientists and doctors.
GCMAF has no side effects. It's completely safe. It's made by the human body. Chemotherapy is only made by dirty, great, big pharmaceutical companies, and it is £40,000 a round on average. We are 1% that.
Now, is it your contention? Well, before we get into why this might be happening, again, in the absence of your critics being here, I'm going to put one or two points to you, and then I'm going to move on to talk about the scientists and the doctors that have worked for you and with you. And then I want you to talk to me about the patients that have taken GCMAF, because I'm very interested in it. Excuse me. Your critics have said that you've been making enormous amounts of money. I know you've had this question before, that the company was making millions of pounds a month in profits. Is that right?
The pharmaceutical companies make 200 billion a year. That's billion with a capital B. If you want to talk about money, you need to talk to them, not a tiny little person like me.
Fair enough. So you wouldn't dispute that the company was very profitable. Again, I'm not trying to be niggly or sly or conniving. You've known me a long time. I'm not doing that. But in the absence of... I'll get hammered later on for speaking to you. I'm not putting these points to you if I don't do it. People have said the company made £1 million a month. That's a lot of money. You're saying it's a drop in the ocean compared to what Big Pharma makes.
When all our bank accounts were closed down, we had 1.4 million saved up over 5 years. And we were using that to open new clinics.
Was it expensive to produce, Dale? I want to move away from that. Was it expensive to produce?
We spent $330,000 a year running our laboratory in the first year, which is 2012. I can't remember the figures after that.
Right, we'll leave the figures alone. I want to talk for a minute before we talk about your court case, which I know you're very worried about. And there's a lot of interest in this, a lot of tweets coming in, by the way. People can follow what people are telling me by going to twitter.com, and where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show in all one word, press enter. You say that, you know, hundreds of scientists, and these are academia-based men and women from accredited universities and doctors, have certified the efficacy of GCMAF, and they have endorsed the claims that it can have very, you know, it can have success in treating some of these illnesses you talked about, cancers and chronic fatigue. These are reputable and easy to identify academics and doctors.
Yes, there are 300 doctors who have written 150 peer-reviewed scientific research papers on GCMAF published in the world's top scientific journals.
And were those articles based on their own experience of using the medicine? Had they used it to treat people, or had they conducted their own trials? How did they reach their conclusions?
Well, some of them are laboratory experiments. Some of them are clinical results. And, you know, there are a number of articles. I mean, you know, my favorite is written by Japan's top five cancer research institutes, including the Atomic Bomb Institute of Nagasaki. They know more about cancer than anyone. And they showed cancer being reduced by 90% in 3 weeks in mice with just 1 nanogram per mouse. So that's a 90% drug reduction in tumor size in 3 weeks.
And this is really interesting because I've got to mention again, they closed down David's company and they've, you know, very definitely gone after David. There's no doubt about that. But while David and I are talking tonight, this is being trialed in Israel. And I understand that, again, from researching today, and of course I didn't do the lazy thing, which is look up Wikipedia or look at the English tabloids. I didn't do that. I looked even deeper into it. Apparently the company in Israel is endorsing, David, basically what you've been saying. I believe the company in Israel has been using it to have a go at dealing with benign tumours in the esophagus or something like that. And they're reporting that it's been very successful. Is that right?
That company is Efrinat. Their GCMF didn't work to start with. We were in touch with 15 Jews in Israel who were on it. They were paying €1,000 a shot. We were €56 a shot. They were €1,000. And they got absolutely nowhere. And then they were given $4.5 million to trial it. Well, I wonder if the reason they were given the $4.5 million was because they couldn't make it work. So I'm a bit surprised to hear that they've done something, but at the rate they are going, it'll be 10 years before anything happens, and that is exactly what Big Pharma wants.
Yeah, they're basically reporting success in dealing with something called recurrent respiratory papillomatosis. And this is actually, ironically, because we've talked about HPV a lot, it's related to the HPV virus. But this is benign tumours in the, I was wrong to say esophagus, it's aerodigestive tract, and I believe they're reporting success there. That's obviously very interesting and should be very interesting from your point of view, because you told me today that the government of this country, the Crown Prosecution Service, effectively wants to put you in prison for selling this stuff without having a licence to do so.
And well, what they should be doing is prosecuting the MHRA for killing 200,000 people a year. The MHRA kill people by denying the public treatments that work, like GCMAF, like cannabis, and by licensing treatments that kill, like opioids and Actos and Avandia. And the really nasty one is Paxil. Now, the MHRA has 2 GlaxoSmithKline directors on the board, and Paxil and Avandia are GlaxoSmithKline products, and they've killed over 80,000, probably 20,000 in England. And what do GlaxoSmithKline get? Absolutely nothing. What do we get? We get all our bank accounts closed. We get our scientists and doctors fired. We end up in prisons. We have to sign bail every week, and we end up on trial. And if you're a big pharmaceutical company, you get absolutely nothing.
Before we talk about what might or might not happen, and I hope it doesn't happen, obviously, you said that the MHRA, just for our listeners, that's the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency here in the UK, you said that a couple of their key people used to work for Glaxo. You can verify that. I don't doubt you, but I've got to just challenge that. Is that a fact?
Yeah, you can put it into Google.
So this is the revolving door thing that you and I have talked about in the past. Then
that's correct. No, it's I only speak the truth. I don't bother with anything else. Everything I say can be verified.
You look, I've known you for over 10 years, but a lot of our listeners won't know you as well as I've known you from interviewing you. And they'll know of the story because the press has been covering the story. Let me remind our listeners that David Noakes...
No, the press has not been covering the story.
Well, you're right, it hasn't. Yeah, I mean, there's been a little bit of tabloid stuff around that when I started looking today about your case. But yes, they've not covered it in any depth. And the national press hasn't covered it.
All the press ever do is speak to the MHRA. They never allow us to say one word.
Let me remind our listeners, David Noakes, computer scientist, former politician, founded Immunobiotech Limited, which, as I said, until recently was making and promoting GC-MAF, and David has explained what it is. Fascinating, really, when he explained it and what, you know, the results that David says his team of doctors and scientists were showing when treating people with various illnesses with the product GC-MAF. And as David has said, his company has been closed down, the bank accounts were seized, the bank accounts were closed down. David has been charged with a crime and is going to court next month. Was I right in saying that you're basically going to stand trial for not having a license to sell GC-MAF? That's what they're going after you for, is that right?
Yes, and there's no way we could have got a license because the MHRA always closes natural treatments. And they have big pharmaceutical company directors on the board. And there's no way on this earth they would ever give us a license. And the only way we could do it was to make it available and hope that it got into the NHS. That was our plan from 2010 onwards. That was our plan.
There'll be listeners saying, there will be listeners shouting at their radios now or their computers. And they'll be saying, right, fair enough, David. We know that the European Union, of course, in recent years, I mean, how many times have I covered it, has been going after natural health products. We know this. At the behest of the lobby groups of the big pharma companies. Nobody would doubt that. But the listeners will be screaming at me to ask you, could you not have found a way to do it legally? I shouldn't say legally. That's a stupid thing to say. Could you not have gone the way of engaging, whether it be the academics at Oxford University or Cambridge University or Harvard, could you not have found a way to include these people in the process that wouldn't have ended up with you being in the situation you're in now?
The academics are all already involved. No one cares about academics. They don't care about the 300 scientists. We could have maybe have done it in some small African country that no one's heard of, but there's no way we could have done it in any Western country because the big pharmaceutical companies have the laws in the Western countries paid for by their own lobby money tied up to suit themselves. So only the monopoly of the big pharmaceutical companies is allowed.
One thing that really distresses me when we spoke earlier, and I don't say distresses lightly, it does distress me. Apparently, and I don't want to be critical because I don't know the man or the woman at all, but apparently you've been told to go quietly and to say it's a fair cop, go and plead guilty. And what annoys me about that is, if it's true that the product has saved lives and that can be easily demonstrated, why you wouldn't plead not guilty along the lines of, well, I can introduce you to Mr. Smith or Mrs. Murphy, whom is alive today because of the treatment. What's happening? Why are you being encouraged to go quietly next month?
Yeah, we're doing all that, but my lawyers told me we have no option but to plead guilty. We're under EU law now, and under EU law, we're not getting a jury. We're just getting a judge. The whole thing is stitched up under EU law.
And I suppose it's ridiculously expensive because I am an idealist, and I must admit that despite attending many court cases as a journalist over the years, I don't know very much about the law. I don't know much more than the average layman or laywoman. But, you know, I've seen too many bloody Hollywood movies, maybe. That's my problem. I'm thinking you should be swanning in from Israel these scientists in Israel who've treated this papillomitis, whatever the bloody thing is called, with GC-MAF. I mean, it's staggering to me that they can say, right, you don't have a license, and they're going to impose a custodial sentence. And you believe that they will impose a custodial sentence. Is that right?
That's what I'm told.
And is there a precedent, David? Has there been, have we seen cases in the recent past where people have been sent to prison for not having a license for selling a medicine?
No, but they want to in this case, because GC-MAF will save the lives of 120,000 people with cancer in England every year. And those are all patients they are going to lose. And they are desperate that GC-MAF does not get out to the public.
You know, it's amazing we're talking about this. And it's amazing that you're saying that GC-MAF would save so many lives, because I won't say to my knowledge, because I do know this to be true, under the 1930 Cancer Act, is it, David? I can't remember which year. It's actually illegal for either you or for me to make a claim that anything other than radiation can cure cancer. Is that right? It is right,
That's
isn't
right.
it?
It's the 1939 Cancer
39,
Act.
39, yeah.
And more people die of cancer in England than any country in Europe. This is the worst place to be. And only England has the 1939 Cancer Act, which makes it illegal to discuss the possibility that cancer can be cured. So how the hell can you cure anyone if you can't even discuss it?
A listener has asked me to ask you about a guy. I shouldn't say a guy. He was a doctor in the United States. I think his name was Jeffrey Bradstreet. And his death was bizarre in the extreme, the circumstances around it. Shot himself twice in the chest. I mean, people don't do that. Was that related to him being involved in the promotion of GC-MAF or other, you know, alternative medicines, do you think?
Well, it's more clever than that. After he shot himself, he threw his body in the river. He was murdered along with 102 other natural doctors, people who were using natural treatments and who don't make any money for the big pharmaceutical companies. So he was using RGC-MAF, and he treated a few people with cancer with great success. But more importantly, he treated 2,000 autistic kids. And he started off with a 15% success rate. And these were non-verbal autistic children. And they would finish being able to go back to normal school completely verbal. And by the time he finished, he was, and so were we, getting 60% of non-verbal autistic kids completely verbal and going to normal school.
I'm going to say something that I don't agree with, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I know listeners will be saying it. Self-censorship is wrong. Of course it is. In any circumstance, I don't endorse it, and I don't button my lip at all. Maybe I should sometimes. I say things. I don't self-censor. But what about in your case? Having this success, and do you know what I found very interesting today, David? I tried as hard as I could to find testimonies from people who bought GC-MAF from your company, but whom were screaming and demanding their money back or criticising you, and I just couldn't find any. And I scoured the internet to find people who then bought the product, but then, you know, wanted retribution or wanted to criticise you. I couldn't find them. That was an interesting thing, number one. But the self-censorship thing, why did you say that it does this and it does that and it does autism? That was bound to be... Hopefully that's somebody who's listening to you talking to me. It might well be. Listen, why did you not just say, we believe that this has great prospects or it has great potential to deal with tumours? Why did you throw in all that autism stuff as well? I'm not saying that I disbelieve it, but you must have known, you're a very smart man, that that was going to put a lot of people's backs up straight away and they were going to say, ah, this is bullshit now. How could this be a one-size-fits-all drug for everything? Did you think about not introducing the autism aspect of it? Go ahead.
We didn't introduce it. It was our patients. It was Dr. Jeffrey Bradstreet who rang me up and said, I think it'll work for autism. And I said, well, I don't think it will. And he said, but I said, well, you can try it if you like. It's a free country. It isn't, but it's supposed to be. And he did try it. And within 8 weeks, he had people recovered from autism. And in every case, it was bringing us up, wanting it to try it for their diseases. And in the end, I gave up saying it won't work for that because it worked for over 50. Now, there are 6,000 diseases out there. So, you know, 50 diseases is still only 1.4% of the total, but it does work for some truly horrible diseases.
I hope to Christ, you know, I said today I wouldn't swear, that, you know, whatever happens in November, that you're not given a custodial sentence, because I don't think you deserve one. I really don't. You know, I had a really, really hard look when we spoke 4 years ago at what the protein is and everything you've said about it, at least in terms of describing what it is and saying that it doesn't do and can't do any harm whatsoever. That's entirely true. And I know your claims and the claims of the scientists that have worked with you, those claims have been consistent over the years. And I know you believe passionately that the product does what you say it does. I can't endorse it, obviously, because I haven't taken it. But I have read many testimonials from people, and you know, who said they've taken it and that they've had great success with it. And I just find that amazing. And I find it amazing that a company in Israel is in trials with it as we speak and is reporting good things with it. It's a rotten situation to be in. It really is. I'm going to give you the final word on it. It's good to catch up with you again. It's been a long time. And like I said, I've known you a few years. We've talked about the European Union for years and other things. And if this product does what you say it does, it's a terrible tragedy that you're going to be defending, you know, next month you're going to be defending your liberty, basically, because you were selling it without a license. Last word to you, mate. What's going to happen? Where's this all going to end?
The really bad thing is the people who, with cancer, who just started GCMAF and then it was banned and then died of their cancers. So there's about 200 people murdered by the MHRA and by the government of Guernsey who were told they would die if they banned GCMAF. So that is the real tragedy. The 200 people who have died unnecessarily. But there are 120,000 people dying of cancer unnecessarily every year who would be in recovery if they had GCMAF. That's a tragedy.
Mate, it was good to catch up with you. I wish you the very best even next month. You're not a danger to anybody, so there's no need to impose a custodial sentence on you, even if you were wrong. Some of our listeners will say, well, he's wrong. Fair enough. You know, you said we're supposed to be a free country. People can make their own minds up. But I believe you're sincere. And I wish you the best. And I hope that I'll be speaking to you again in a couple of months and you won't be in prison. And the best.
Don't take it from me. Take it from the scientists. Take it from the doctors. Take it from the 9,000 people who took it successfully. Don't take it from me.
Cheers, David. All the best. Thanks for coming back on the programme. That was David Noakes, folks, who's been on this programme several times, but he's been speaking to me on various radio programmes for about 10 years or more. If you want to learn all there is to learn about the European Union, by the way, go to eutruth.org.uk to find out more about Immunobiotech, David's company that was closed down. You just need to put Immunobiotech into a search engine. It'll take you straight to the website there. It's exactly a minute and a half past six. We're live. It's the Richie Allen Show for Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. We'll take a very quick break. When we come back, I'll read some of your comments. There have been many of them. And don't forget, Mike Rivero joins us live from the US from Hawaii, in fact, in about 10 minutes' time. Back shortly.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
This a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
By the way, if you think that David is full of shit, send me a tweet. I'll read it out. You know, this is not a closed shop, as it were. I always try to canvass the other opinion, the other side of it. And I'm happy for somebody to come on here and tell me that David is not, that he's wrong, that this is just snake oil and it doesn't work. Like I said, I'm not endorsing it. I couldn't endorse it. All I can say is my experience of the guy over the years. And he's an eccentric guy, David is. And he's a very, very bright guy. But my experience of him has been that he believes what he says. And his website, which I will put a link out on Twitter to in a minute when I get a chance, details those scientists and doctors who've worked with GCMAF and who have endorsed his claims that it is successful and can be highly successful in treating some very serious illnesses. That's all I can say. If you think it's a nonsense, send me a tweet and I'll read your tweet out. Alrighty. What are we, 4 minutes past the Air Wednesday's programme? Lot of tweets on that. Delroy tweets, Richie, Brexit is staggering. Vaccines are staggering. Medical, cannabis, fracking, Saudis accidentally torturing someone to death is staggering. Child abduction, adoption is staggering. The prospect of G5 is as staggering as GCMAF or whatever it is, says Delroy. Thanks for that, Delroy, there. Number of people tweeting that you're not surprised to learn that the regulatory bodies in this country and elsewhere are sometimes staffed with people whom used to work for companies like Glaxo and others. Yes, that's not a secret, by the way. It's an outrage, but it isn't a secret. They don't try to keep it secret. No big deal, you know. What have you got there? You've got the FDA. Yeah, we've got four or five people who used to work for some of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. But don't worry about it. They don't work for those companies anymore. I'm sure when they have decisions to make, they will be completely objective. No, they won't. And they're not. Hi to Just Sean, by the way, to Cartoon Drunk. Hi, Just Sean, to Busy as well. Scrolling on down, a lot of tweets came in on that. I'm not going to read them because my voice is already going, right? And I'm reckoning by the time Michael Rivero comes on, I'm not going to have a voice. And by the way, it's so bad, the voice, and it is getting bad. There might be, the prospect might, I might not be around. I don't mean around. But I might not be able to do the show tomorrow. It's getting worse, the voice. And the laryngitis has gotten worse over the last couple of days. We'll see how I am. I might just sit here tomorrow and play music, if the worst comes to the worst. Diane, who's not far from my old city, my old town, says, pretty shocking stuff there. You can see why they have gone after him so viciously. That's Diane's opinion there. Hi to Ricky Emmett as well, to David Stanford has listened to the programme. Again, if you have an opinion on that and you think it's nonsense or you don't agree with what David was saying, do tweet me. And I will read your tweets out. You know, whatever I think about David and his company is irrelevant. Thanks to Faisal for sending me the link to the website. It is immunobiotech.eu. Immunobiotech.eu. It was Jean Ann who sent me the message about Jeffrey Bradstreet and the bizarre death that man purportedly had, shooting himself in the chest twice and then throwing himself into a river. Yeah, you just can't believe it, really. Alrighty, going to take some music to give myself a break. When we come back, I'll be joined by none other than Michael Rivero, making his monthly visit to us. He makes a monthly visit, by the way. As you know, where we talk all things, mostly US politics and the rest of it. from an independent point of view. This is the Richie Allen Show, by the way. 7 minutes past six on Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. Back after this from the late, great Dolores O'Riordan and the Cranberries. This is Zombie. Those idiots walking around with phones that are bumping into you on the streets. Zombies. Those cretins on the buses with their heads buried in their phones. Zombies. Oblivious to the fact that things are going on around them. Zombies. Music from Dolores O'Riordan and the Cranberries there, 10 minutes past the hour. That's Zombie, my next guest, very well known to you. Many of you grab his excellent daily programme, The What Really Happened Show. He is a one-time filmmaker, journalist, writer, excellent broadcaster. Let's welcome him back live from Oahu in Hawaii. It's my old friend, Michael Rivero. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
Always good. I'm a little bit croaky. I have the old lurgy, the old infection on the throat, Mike, but I'll do my best anyway. Thanks for coming back. We'll jump straight into it then in the time we have, because you're a busy man preparing your own show. Stormy Daniels won't be allowed to sue President Trump. Right. I know it's hard not to laugh, isn't it?
I'm sick of hearing about Stormy
I know you are.
I really am, you know.
It's a fascinating story because I believe that it's fairly obvious that Donald Trump had sexual relations with Stormy Daniels at some stage. That's his own
Who
business.
Cares?
I couldn't care less.
Who cares? Okay.
But I'm interested. Yeah. I am interested. Well, you say who cares. It does go to the heart of the public's trust in any elected official. If the guy can't fess up about his sexual dalliances or anything else that he did, well, he can't be trusted for much else, Mike. That's what people would say. Some people. No.
Well, my opinion is that Stormy Daniels was trying to extort Donald Trump, with a story. And yes, they probably had an encounter, and she's a porn star, which means that for enough money, she'll have sex with anybody. But then she turned around. She got hush money from Donald Trump, and then she refused to hush up. And then she went public, and Donald Trump said she's lying, and she tried to sue Donald Trump for saying she's a liar for defamation. And the judge was very correct in throwing the case out, saying that Trump has a First Amendment right to say she's lying.
Yeah, fair enough. Does she not have the right to be heard, though? A judge threw out her defamation suit against Trump, and he cited the First Amendment and said, well, this is all just political banter. Is she not entitled to say, well, no, he's accused me of lying, he's got to back that up in court? What do you think?
I think that given her reputation, you know, what the judge basically said was, whether or not the sex actually happened or not, it's not defamation for Donald Trump to say she's lying when she says what she's saying. He's defending himself against her accusations, and that is, in fact, covered by the First Amendment.
Fair enough, Mike. We'll leave Stormy Daniels alone. Michael Rivera is our guest. WhatReallyHappened.com is where to find out more about Mike in the unlikely event you haven't heard Michael before. Big deal being made here today, Michael, of Canada legalizing the sale and use of cannabis. How are you reading that?
Well, I imagine a lot of people in the United States are going to be applying for Canadian citizenship right about now.
Right. My mic was down momentarily. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, I might be one of them, you know.
Michael, are these stories painted in terms of you get a headline, but you don't get too much detail in terms of how is it going to work? Is it going to be heavily regulated? And what exactly can people buy? What can, you know what I'm saying? Do people know what it is they'll be allowed to buy yet? Do they have any idea?
Well, we have several states in the United States where recreational marijuana is now legalized, and you can buy it from state-controlled stores. And, of course, it's heavily taxed. You're not allowed to basically buy it from the guy growing it in his yard next door. You do have to buy it from the state-regulated stores because, of course, they're collecting taxes on it. And I imagine it's probably going to be the same way up in Canada.
What about the fears that people who've been using this for, well, forever, whether illegally or, well, mostly illegally, people who've been using it to make products to treat pain and to treat seizures and other things, they're saying that they feel that this, when for example, when a country like Canada says, well, we'll legalize it, when the UK says, which it said last week, but we don't have any details yet, but that in a month or so, it'll be prescribable. Now, those who've been campaigning for years to have cannabis made legal, they say their biggest concern is that when countries say, yes, we will legalize it, it's because they've been lobbied by big pharmaceutical companies who want to take it over, Mike. What do you think?
Yeah, that's absolutely what's going on. Now, you need to understand that the medicinal value of cannabis comes from a component called CBD. And already here in the United States, the FDA has authorized one single pharmaceutical company to manufacture pharmaceutical CBD, which is the non-psychoactive portion of cannabis that does have the medicinal benefit. Now, of course, this doesn't affect hemp-derived CBD, but it does show that the pharmaceutical industries are moving to take control of this for their own profitability.
And it's never good, is it, Michael, when that happens? It's never good because people are not going to get the purest form of the hemp or the cannabis plant at all. They're not. They're going to get what they're given by Big Pharma, approved by the FDA.
Well, basically, the model is that we're not allowed to grow anything that we can heal ourselves with. The whole idea is to keep us dependent on large corporations for anything we need to improve the quality of our life, whether it's food or medicine or anything at all. We're forbidden from growing our own food in certain parts of this country. We're not allowed to grow food crops on our land. We're not allowed to collect rainwater. We have to buy it all from large corporations.
Michael, I've been a lot of tweets coming in. You and I generally jump around a few different stories. As we're speaking, there's a developing story in Crimea, which I know you'll be aware of. It's interesting. It's probably a difficult one for you or for me to comment on because it's early. But about 19 people, maybe more, have been killed in a shooting at a college in Crimea, which was, of course, annexed by Russia. Quite rightly, Russia had no choice, of course, because of its deep water port and everything else when Ukraine, of course, was was the subject of a coup orchestrated by Victoria Nuland, which Michael has written about and talked about as well. An 18-year-old student apparently ran through the college firing at fellow pupils before killing himself. People don't know what's going on there. As I said, he committed suicide there. This is not a part of the world, Michael, that would be accustomed to people in colleges running around with guns. Rather bizarre story, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, no. We've had a lot of those same incidents here in the United States of America. And the first question I'm going to ask is, was this individual on prescription antidepressant drugs? Because there's a very strong link between these medications and random acts of mass violence. And I would like to remind you that Russia didn't annex Crimea. Crimea had two referendums. The first was for secession from Ukraine following the U.S.-backed coup d'etat against Kiev. And the second one was to join the Russian republics. And this idea that Russia either stole or annexed Crimea is just part of the Russia-bashing propaganda.
Well, it is. And I wonder, at some stage today or tonight, will some sort of spin be put on this story in terms of the motivation? Will the motivation for this shooting, this crazy shooting, will the motivation be spun in an anti or, a negative, in a negative spin against Russia? What do you think?
I would expect that that's exactly what's going to happen.
You think it'll be claimed that the kid is pro-Russian and it's something along those lines, Michael?
Yeah, probably exactly along those lines. It's going to be spun to try and make Russia look bad, or Russia is somehow responsible for the mass violence. But every time there's one of these mass shootings and the question of the prescription antidepressants comes up, it's dismissed. It's undermined. I remember following Sandy Hook, and there was a citizens group in Connecticut that tried to use their state's equivalent of the Freedom of Information Act law to try and find out what medications Adam Lanza was on. And there was this attorney from the state medical examiner's office, Patrick Quanishay, who came into the hearing and said that even if in this one case the medications were the real cause of the shooting, that was something Americans didn't need to hear because they might stop taking the medications being prescribed by their doctor. Now, if you look at the economy of Connecticut, it's very high. A large part of it is the pharmaceutical industry. And of course, Quanishay was wrong. It's not just this one incident. There have been hundreds of cases documented in SSRIstories.com of these medications linked to suicide attempts and violence. But again, these medications are making money. The states want to get the tax revenues. And so they basically downplay this linkage. But there is a very clear linkage. When I was a kid, guns were everywhere. Everybody had a gun. You got your gun on your first gun on your 12th birthday. You would take your guns to school. Nobody said anything about it because on your way home from school, you would varmint the gardens, the farm fields on your way home. But these mass shootings really didn't start to show up until these medications started really flooding into the general population.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I've seen evidence. I know you've put evidence out there through whatreallyhappened.com. Michael Rivera was our guest. We've got Mike for another 10 minutes. My voice is going to go anyway. It's not been great today or yesterday. Michael, speaking of Russia and Syria, these are very interesting times in terms of what's been happening in Syria. But more importantly, in terms of what your own government is saying and what it's likely to do. The BBC ran a programme on Monday of this week, I think. It would have been Monday, Panorama, where they again tried to link the Assad government to a number of chemical weapons attacks in Syria over the last couple of years. And it was a very subjective, very poorly edited programme by the BBC. It was very heavily slanted against the Assad government. But yet it conceded that the Assad government is virtually on the threshold of total victory in that country, where, of course, it has been aided and assisted by Russia. It seems to me, and I could be wrong, because I can't monitor everything, that your government has been fairly quiet on not only what's happening in Syria now, but on the future of Syria. Is that true, Michael, that your government has gone quiet on it? And if so, why?
Well, it absolutely has gone quiet. There's absolutely nothing about Syria in the corporate media here because, yeah, we're losing this war. We have pretty much lost it. And every one of these claims of Assad being behind a chemical attack has been discredited. It's always been by the U.S.-backed militants to frame Assad. And again, the reason is because Assad has no reason to use chemical weapons. He's basically won the war. And people are beginning to notice that every time there's one of these chemical weapons attack, it's not against the militant groups opposing Assad. It's always targeting women and children, which makes absolutely no sense unless it is a propaganda stunt to make Assad look bad. And so people are picking up on that. This war is pretty much over, and it does look like the U.S. has lost it.
So they're quiet at the moment. That's not going to last, though, because the Israelis obviously won't stand for the United States and the U.K., which has been, you know, partners in crime with Israel and Saudi Arabia in funding the lunatics that have turned Syria into the mess that it's in. So we can expect, what should we expect, Michael? What will Israel be expecting of and demanding from your government?
Well, Israel wants to hang on to the Golan Heights. They have basically occupied it for a long time now. They've officially annexed it, but nobody recognizes it. Now they're putting pressure on the U.S. government to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights and all of the oil and gas underneath it. So I think that's going to be their agenda right now. Certainly, Israel continues to express concern about Iran's presence in Syria, and the U.S. government is obediently making that a giant issue. But whether or not they're going to be able to accomplish anything or not remains to be seen. But the U.S. influence in the Middle East is definitely on the wane. We're seeing more and more of these Middle Eastern countries turning toward Russia and entering the Russian sphere of influence. Basically, the United States overall is losing this attempt to try and bring the world back under the hegemonic domination of the U.S. dollar.
You must have been, and I know you have been, because I follow whatreallyhappened.com regularly. This Saudi journalist allegedly murdered in Turkey, this guy Khashoggi, have you not been just even a man as experienced as you? Have you not found yourself looking on in amazement at the Western media's treatment of this story in terms of how they're expressing so much horror that this man could have been murdered in the bizarre, macabre way that he was murdered, dismembered? Jesus, Mike, this is the Saudis. I can't believe the coverage this is getting in terms of people expressing so much shock and horror at a journalist being murdered by the Saudis. This is a country that beheads people on a weekly basis on soccer grounds. This is a country that has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, including bombing children on a school bus, bombing weddings. It's crazy, Mike, isn't it, to watch the way this particular story is being covered and the faux outrage expressed by the Western media. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. It's very obvious they've made a big issue about this, and maybe it's because this Khashoggi was working for the Washington Post, but they have made a big issue about it. At the same time, of course, Israel is targeting journalists down there in Gaza. Nobody makes a big fuss about that. But there does seem that there's another agenda behind it. It may have been to disrupt the Saudi economic summit, the so-called Davos in the desert, which that has succeeded. A lot of the people who are going to participate in that have now bowed out of that meeting. It got a lot of attention, and the degree of attention it got was in and of itself rather suspicious when you look at how the media ignores Saudi Arabia's other barbarities in Yemen or Israel's barbarities in Gaza. And it does look like this was made an issue for some other reason. And I'm not sure what it is. It may be trying to set the stage for the downfall of Mohammed bin Salman, because he's not very popular in his own country. He's not very popular with his own family. If you'll remember, when he was named Crown Prince, he literally locked up members of the royal family in
That's
a hotel
right.
and refused to let them out until they transferred billions of their wealth to the Saudi state treasury, because the Saudi economy was put into a tailspin by that that oil price war with Russia. And so Mohammed took some desperate measures. It did not make him popular. There's a lot of talk about a potential palace coup against him.
Madness, Mike. You know, you talk there about, I mean, when conservative politicians are asked about the unspeakable crimes committed by Saudi Arabia, they point to the fact that the Saudis are a big ally in the war on terror, which is a nonsense, because what they really mean is the Saudis are a big ally in getting weapons to lunatic Wahhabists in Syria and elsewhere. It's sickening. So they're an important ally. And even Labour Party members of Parliament won't affirm that they would stop selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. Now, I know the Emily Thornberry, the shadow foreign secretary, did say over the weekend that she would want to temporarily suspend selling weapons to Saudi while they look into what's happening in Yemen. It's absolutely crazy. A word for the two journalists murdered by the Israelis, Michael. Nothing can be done about Israel, can it? You and I have been talking about Israel for over 10 years. Israel, yeah. Nothing can be done about it. It can murder men, women and children, put children in prison, bulldoze homes, make Gaza smaller and smaller, make the occupied territory smaller and smaller, and nobody's ever going to do anything, right?
It doesn't seem like anybody can do anything. You've got Israel just being Israel. They're protected by the United States at the United Nations. Israel is currently bombing Gaza to get them to stop the protests because the optics on that are bad. And it's very alarming to see a country that, for all intents and purposes, is above international law.
Mike, just for today, we'll leave it there. I know you're busy, but I'm absolutely dying here with laryngitis, and I've got to go and get some painkillers. Thanks for coming back today. We'll do a longer segment with your permission next month. Love having you on, as you well know. Michael's website is whatreallyhappened.com. Check out his radio show if you haven't before. It's quality. It really is. There's not much of that around anymore, sadly. Mike, all the best to Claire, and thanks for coming back today, and I look forward to next month.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thank you. The great Michael Rivero, live there from Oahu in Hawaii, whatreallyhappened.com. And I tell you what, folks, I'm going to get out of here like I did yesterday. I'm going to cut it short because the voice is collapsing on me as I'm speaking to you now, and I've got to look after it. I don't want to make it any worse than it is. Big shout out to David Noakes, who spoke to me earlier on. Absolutely must listen that if you missed it, you didn't catch it. Check it out on the podcast, which will be online soon, or on the YouTube edition of the programme, which will be online soon as well. Hugely important stuff. David Noakes, and you just heard Michael Rivero there. I will let you know tomorrow whether I'm on with you tomorrow, Thursday at 5 as usual. We'll see how the old voice is tomorrow, but it's not been great for the last few days, and I don't want to make it any worse. Going to leave you with some Simple Minds. Thanks for listening to The Richie Allen Show. Look after yourselves and one another. We'll do it all again real soon. Okay, bye for now. Thank you, bye.
Said to me, meet me down by the gallows tree, for it's sad news I bring about this old town and all that it's suffering. Some say troubles are about. Someday soon they're gonna pull the old town down. One day we'll return here when the Belfast child sings again. Brothers, sisters, where are you now? As I look for you right through the crowd. All my life here I've spent with my faith in God and church and the government. Some say troubles abound. Someday soon they're gonna pull the old town down. One day we'll return.